You're about to listen to a Chimera Cast, where imagination
and reality
intermingle. We are your hosts, Sam
and Ruth.
So the lights flashed, please find your seats, and as the curtain opens, prepare to be entertained.
Tonight's podcast is a little bit of Stage and Steel Productions,
the community theater with an edge.
Stage and Steel Productions primarily creates its performances around storylines that relate to medieval and fantasy times. There's a lot of stage combat used within the storylines, and therefore the tagline of Community Theater with an Edge was born. Back in 2010, can you remember back that far? Four creative people came together, each with a variety of theater background, and decided they wanted to create their own community theater. And when they researched how to create their own community theater, do you remember the very first thing we learned?
The first thing that we learned?
Yeah, the very first thing we learned.
That we needed a niche?
Well, no, the first thing we learned was you don't want to create your own community theater.
a lot of the articles were stating about that, yeah.
Then we went, oh, we can do it. Let's create a community. Let's create our own community theater. But you're right. The first thing we realized is that in order to be successful, we're going to have to create a niche. And looking at all the theaters in our area and what they were doing and what made them different and really kind of researching that, we looked at ourselves and asked ourselves what are our strengths. And we realized that we had previously done a couple of shows with stage combat. And we did have a liking for the medieval story time. So that could be our niche. Medieval stories that utilize stage combat. And fantasy, because sometimes you just want to add that little extra bit of fantasy and have a lot of fun with it. We weren't really concerned about recreating the time. We weren't worried about being historically accurate. We were just worried about creating the best entertainment we could possibly create. The other thing that we also were pretty good at the time we realized was improv. So how could we introduce improv into our shows? And that's where we really started playing with audience participation. Let's make audience participation a really important part of our shows. How do we make it so that instead of the audience sitting in the dark and just clapping politely at the end of every scene, we could turn it into something where they are, you know, medieval, cheering and booing all along, making comments, participating, and eventually we even, right from the beginning, we knew we wanted to have the audience make decisions that were important to the story. So we started thinking about how we could do those kinds of things, and then that would help us out with our niche. And the other thing we knew is that we had a lot of technology experience. So how could we bring technology into a theater performance? How could we utilize typical interactive... How could we utilize today's interactive gaming techniques to enhance a performance live on stage? So those are our niches. Medieval storylines that utilize stage combat, audience participation with improvisation, and digital technology.
We started off with our first shows having regular backdrops. And then once we were able to get a hold of a nice scrim, we began to project our background so we can be in a dark, deep cavern in one scene, and in the next scene we can be back in the brightly lit castle, or hunting down the polygons in the middle of a forest. We've done interactive games and such with the audience where we bring them up and we've created interactive torture devices and stuff like that up on the screen that they've got to bounce and hop around the stage, almost using the Kinect-like kind of technology to get them to do silly things. It's fun, it's funny. We've also used that as a way to gauge an audience on questions or having riddles to help the main characters get past a certain obstacle where the audience can be pulled or even help figure it out. One of our favorite ones that we've done with our The King's Other Men, where we have Ye Olde Family Feud, or we call it Ye Olde Kingdom Feud, and we actually pull the audience on a bunch of questions so that then when this part comes up in the show, actors are actually asked the questions and we don't know what the answers are really going to be until we see Survey Says pop up. And that's a lot of fun.
You know, we do not have intricate sets. There's generally just the one castle set that we build and change around for every show. It's like, it used to be, okay, so where are we putting the windows this time? And the door will be over here. We don't have intricate sets. And we're not amazing people with our sets. But the digital sets allowing us to go anywhere as we want to go. And they're not stagnant all the time. I love just being able to have some birds flying through the forest canopy. I love having the caverns actually have dripping water in the digital set. We did the fire marshes where the two characters were filmed and they had to jump from place to place in the forest because there was these wells of fire that were popping up. Being able to do that, open a door in a digital set, is a lot of fun and really adds something different that hasn't been done a lot in community theater in this area.
Oh, Scrooge wiping the digital snow in the middle of a light snowfall in the cemetery off his tomb in the middle to show that his death is imminent. And to react off of that, and then to be able to not have to sweep all the snow up in between scenes. That's nice.
It's always good not to have to sweep up snow.
But we've done videoing of the actors for, like, our Ghost of Christmas Present, where we put her on a green screen and recorded her, and then we're able to make them look big on the digital backdrop as they're calling out for Scrooge to wake up, come and know me better, man, that they're so big, they're bigger than the door, and then we can shrink them down to be normal size, and then they usually pop out from behind the scrim, or we shut the lights off, and then they pop back up again when the lights come up to give an illusion that they were big.
Or the character who had to fight off the giant spider. We've done that a couple of times where the actor walks behind the scrim and then suddenly we see the actor walking in the video projection that's on the scrim and then a spider comes out and they have to fight the spider. Those kinds of things that we're able to do and really have a lot of fun with that.
And what I love about that aspect of it is that it harkens back to the Winsor McKay with Gertie the Dinosaur kind of technology and wonderment where he was showing an animated dinosaur on the screen and then he walks by the screen and it looks like he's actually stepped up on the dinosaur and rides off. And it's that kind of stuff that I like that we like to try to add into our shows.
We also did a magical fight. Do you remember that? Two characters, or it was one character slinging a magical attacks on another character. And
that was when they were behind the scrim and we had the digital lights and stuff flashing all over the place on it, wasn't it?
Yeah, we did it twice. One time it was they were all behind the scrim, but the other time we were in front of the scrim, and the character who was being attacked had to bounce back and forth, and then the magical effects were blasting on the scrim, and the actor had to remember when to bounce and where to bounce, where to jump to, because those effects were all pre-recorded.
Well, it's all that choreography that we do.
Yes.
Not just with the swords, but yeah, choreography with the digital and the lighting.
You know, and that's funny. You said choreography. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. Like in a medieval Christmas carol when Scrooge is interacting with the Dorset, and it's in the lines, you know, Scrooge opened the door, and then the door digitally opens, and Scrooge peered beyond to see what was beyond the on the balcony, and then Scrooge closes the door, and the door visually closes. That is a choreography of its own, of the digital set piece having the ability to digitally open and close a door, and then the tech person who's on the board, who is watching and listening to the actors on stage and hitting a button to digitally open and close those doors. You know, there's a lot of choreography that goes on with our digital pieces.
Yeah, and there's been little hiccups and stuff. Usually I try to make sure I'm standing completely in front of the door just in case there's a little bit of a delay from the button getting pushed to the door closing. That's just some behind-the-scenes stuff, or when accidentally the control panel shows up on the screen during a glitch of the screens. There's little things. Everyone knows it's live theater, so there's sometimes something can go a little glitchy or two.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to live theater. Well, we just did archery in our last show, and it was just so funny. We brought up an audience member to be one of our archers, and the actor was showing the audience member how to use the bow, and the tech, who was his first time doing the tech, saw the actor pull the bowstring and immediately shot off the arrow.
Well, the part of that is that they're supposed to watch for the way the hand is moved, and then you're told to let your hand release up in the air, and that's the cue for the arrow to shoot. But yeah, he saw the demo of that going on.
And just poof, there it went, the arrow. It was kind of funny.
Well, in the beginning, we started off, like, when we were at the church hall in Carnegie, we were just right behind the screen, or screen, the stage curtain. So we had to kind of peek between there, and then it would be if there was one of us that wasn't on stage at the time, we're, like, peeking around the corner and going, okay, do it now, on the stuff when we were trying to do all the interactive laser reading connect kind of stuff at the beginning. And then that's helpfully evolved to relocating the tech table in spaces where we can see a little better. But in our new location, we've actually been able to set a camera up in the back of the audience that has a monitor wireless to the front of the tech table now, and we can see what goes on behind stage. We can see what goes on in the front of the stage behind the stage now. So that's been very helpful.
It's like you remember back with the, what was it, I believe it was the Revenge of the Polygons, where we had two audience members up on the stage, and they were doing the game, we were playing the game where they had to recreate the shapes that they saw on the screen.
Yeah, it was based on that game, yeah, when the wall comes at you and you gotta try to put yourself in the same position of that.
Right. You know, the audience never knew that on the other side of that scrim were two people standing there with Xbox controllers.
Pads, yeah.
We both had joysticks, and one of us is looking at one of the two audience members, and as they're moving, we're hitting the right button to correspond to their movement to change the digital set. You know, it's little simple things like that. It's like the magic and the power of a scrim. No one saw the actor standing in the dark behind the scrim, and it was magic. Even though it was so, as we call it in the real world, low tech. It was very low tech.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Here we are. I never had a picture of that. I always would have loved to have had a picture of that from behind the scenes of there we were standing there with our joysticks playing, you know, mimic what the audience member is doing. Well, this is supposed to be about the history.
Oh, we went from history right into talking about our digital side,
though. Yeah, yeah.
And that's a little bit of the history, because, again, it started off our first show. We didn't have anything, but we didn't even have a scrim our first show.
Yeah, we didn't have a scrim.
We just did the screen, and again, at an older church hall that while we were there, the longer we were there, the more they were able to put new money into it, because even this, the... the curtain wouldn't open and close right, and it always jumped the track.
Jumped the track in the middle of the show.
Yeah, or when we were trying to change a scene, and then we have to kind of act like we're not standing there as we're walking across the stage, closing the screen.
Harold! The curtain is supposed to be open right now. I'm trying to get the curtain open, Queen.
Harold, you broke my curtain again.
You broke my curtain again.
The second show we did was the Vampire in King Arthur's Court. And that one we had the scrim for the first time, experimenting with it the most. Because we used that to make the vampire's crypt look all foggy. Because it was that shark tooth spray-like kind of scrim.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see through it, but with the fog machine that we were using, it kept the fog on the stage, so that was kind of cool. All you saw was what we were wanting you to see with the lights that were turned on in spots.
Now, we've been talking about a scrim, but a scrim is a particular curtain that you can actually see through. But if you put light on the front of the scrim, then you can't see through the curtain. It becomes an opaque curtain. And if you put light behind the scrim, then the scrim becomes transparent and you can see through it and to see the light on the other side. And that's where the magic of a scrim comes from. So when we project onto the scrim, then we can actually stand behind it and you can't see us through it.
In our Jury of Souls, the ending had the more or less the villain, the bad guy, getting caught by the souls of this the keep, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah.
So what we did was we recorded a couple of friends and their kids in silhouette, and then we were able to have them act like they're zombies or whatnot coming to grab you, and then that was projected from behind, so it looked like the actor was getting grabbed by these spirit shadow demons at the end. And that worked really cool. A lot of people seemed to like that effect on it. It was better than when we used to do where I would stand in the back of the audience with the LCD projector when we had that, the evil genie or that fairy monster or whatever that thing was, and I just kind of held the projector and wiggled it back and forth up on the stage.
So it would project on the walls of the theater. That was Revenge of the Polygons.
That was Revenge of the Polygons.
Yeah, and the demon was moving throughout the space, yes.
We were still experimenting. I couldn't remember. Yeah, it was the demon that was going from body to body.
Yeah.
So when one of the characters was getting possessed, I aimed it at them, and then I would flip it away real fast so that they couldn't see it. And yeah, I forgot about that. That's how we had the entity move from person to person.
Well, let's say we found out by the hall we were in had a white ceiling, and we found out kind of by mistake one night.
Oh, that was a mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, that you could project on the ceiling. Go figure. It was a white ceiling. You could project on the ceiling. But then all of a sudden we started making the ceiling into a cavern. And one night we had spiders crawling across the ceiling.
That was the day we forgot to close the scrim on something. And we couldn't figure out where the extra light was coming from. And here it was. The projector was still on. And we looked up and it was really cool looking. So, yeah, we've done star fields. The clouds, wasn't it? The skylight for the one show where it opened up to take the spirit of the good guy away and stuff.
Oh, snowflakes, yeah. All kinds of fun stuff we've done with that. Projecting on the, yeah. The Stage and Steel started in 2010, and we were located in Carnegie, Pennsylvania. We were there until 2018, when we kind of started talking with another community theater, Strip Lake Community Theater, and started realizing that, you know, if we were to combine our forces, we could do more shows a year together.
We also had actors that lived all in the area, and so they kind of lived between our two theaters, so they were able to perform shows here, and then they were doing shows there, and then they were talking about stuff that they did there, that they did here, and then we'd have actors from there come here, and then they would talk about the stuff they did there, and then actors would go there. So we were already slowly becoming a small family to begin with all those years.
And when Strip Lake Esther Blight got their own space. They're like, look, if you guys come, you know, come move in with us, that will help us to afford the space better. So in 2019, we moved from Carnegie to Weirton, West Virginia, where we opened up our shows there. And we had to start all over with our audiences, had to start teaching our audiences once again what audience interaction was and how we are different from other theaters. And that was a lot of fun to start over again. Then in 2020, of course, COVID hit and we had to, you know, we couldn't perform. So we, you know, tried a lot of stuff online and to try to keep us going and all. And then in 22, we were open on a physical stage again in Follinsby, West Virginia, which is where we are now. When we found our niche way back in 2010, one of the things we realized is that we were not going to have too many fantasy and medieval storylines that fit our need for audience participation in stage combat from the supply of, you know, shows that you can purchase the rights to. So we had the ability to do some writing. And we knew we were going to have to produce our own material. The very first show we did in 2010 was 2 one-act plays. It was There We Were and the one-act version of The Kings of the Men. So writing our own material is really kind of interesting and fun.
Gives us a little more freedom to a degree.
Yeah. If we needed to, say we, you know, we cast, we get a cast and there's a character and we're like, well, we ended up with a female or a male for this. We can quickly go through and change whatever lines in the script we need to change to afford the gender change there. We can make some changes however we need to based on the show or the way it's laying out with the set and the space. We don't have to pay royalties. We can video our productions. We can sell the videos of our productions. The rights are completely ours. The con for every pro, of course, is because they are all original shows, it takes a lot more marketing to get people to understand and be excited about coming to an original production.
We try coming up with some catchy sounding names so that people can, oh, that sounds kind of cool, let's go see Phantom of the Keep or whatnot. But then they hear Polygoon's Revenge. What's a polygoon? If they never saw the first show we did that introduced polygoons. Because we have our own trilogy. We just need to let people know it's a trilogy. It's reusable characters, everybody. It's our first tentpole.
Well, the realm of public domain is our best friend, of course. One of the first adaptations we did was Charles Dickens's A Christmas Carol, and we converted it into a medieval Christmas Carol. And we took Scrooge, and we put him on a much larger stage. Scrooge is now King Scrooge, in charge of an entire kingdom, and all the other characters are knights in his court, and this kingdom is in dire straits, and it takes the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future to try to help get King Scrooge on the right path. And it was a lot of fun. It's everyone loves A Christmas Carol, and ours is different. A majority of the original characters are there, and there's a few new characters and several plot twists.
With a twist.
Yes, with a twist that we've introduced into the story, which has made it a lot of fun. Christmas Carol is a story you're willing to see every year, but when you do see one that's a little bit different, it really stands out. So our Christmas Carol, I'm really proud of our Christmas Carol. And we do it not every year. We try to break it up. We have two different versions. We have a version that is the storyteller version, and we have a version that is full characters. The full characters is, you know, like a normal stage play, and the storyteller version is where 5 storytellers are breaking up all the narrator lines and all the other characters besides Scrooge.
We tried to do that one a little more artsy-like, with minimal set. Everyone's dressed in black, well, except for Scrooge. Scrooge is still in his costume.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone wears black with black kidney belts, and they're able to swap between the costumes depending on who they're going to be and whatnot, so that the audience doesn't get too confused. They got their own props that represent who they are.
We've delved in the realm of Robin Hood, and there was, you already said it before, the vampire in King Arthur's court. Public domain helped a lot with. And then we have our completely original stories as well. One of the ones that are very popular is The King's Other Men, which is a farce on the difference between female and male knights. And
yeah, the Ye Olde Battle of the Sexes.
Ye Olde Battle of the Sexes, yes, of course. Love that, that's just such a fun show. And one that I can't wait to bring to Follansby in the next couple of years, which is Knights of the Living Dead.
Oh, we had our own murder mystery. We've done that before.
Oh, yeah,
where
yeah.
Where we let the audience actually choose who it was, and based on who the audience chose was who the murderer was. So everyone in the cast had to know all the fights from both sides. And if they happen to be the one that the audience chose to be the killer, then there's this big, huge fight at the end, and they had to know all the parts so that if they're the killer, they're on the side that either gets away free or ends up knocking the rest of the actors off so they can get away free.
That was a lot of fun. The Stage and Steel really thinks of itself as having two demographics. The audience that it entertains, but also the actors that it trains. Stage combat is not something that you can just, you know, do after, you know, 5 minutes of instruction. It really takes something that has a lot of practice and a lot of time to learn how to do it safely. And we take our time to make sure that we really train our actors well. So, you know.
Because sometimes when the new people come in, they know from the movies and Star Wars and Conan and all that stuff, the way the swords swing. But on stage and for combat, it's choreographed. And Ruth likes to keep us safe. And we can't cut, change around. All right, action. You don't do that on the stage.
You only got one shot, you know, to get a fight. You got to get it right. And we have to learn how to, when we do make small mistakes, to not let the audience know we made a small mistake. You can't just say, you know, oh, heck, and and start the fight over again.
Wait. I gotta do that again. I'm sorry. No, we don't get to do that.
Yeah, that's where we have our rule.
You just keep going and then hope that what you do next is cool enough to prevent anyone from remembering what you did bad that last time. And you wait until the end of the show, and then you go to your partner and go, oh, I'm so sorry I missed that.
Let's go fix it. But yeah, we really do take our actors as a demographic that we're here to help them. That's what community theater is about, is, you know, really helping them. So we do a lot of extra exercises as often as we can for character development, for improv, to get them more comfortable with improv games. And really, you know, having the ability and the freedom to kind of help develop their character throughout the rehearsal space. I really enjoy that we do that we allow them to help define their character niches or their character, how their character is being presented to the audience. And
yeah, because sometimes you write the character with a certain idea in mind, but then you've seen when the actor can kind of bring them to life with just a little bit of a twist or a different turn on how their talk or how they hold themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool to see one actor play a character one way, and then when we do the show again a year or two later, someone else do that character a completely different way. It's like, oh, wow, that's kind of cool, too. They don't have to be, fully pigeonholed into, this is how this character acts, this is what they do, this is their backstory, this is what they did, so now you are that person.
Mm-hmm. But our actors are coming in and they're, you know, learning about not only stage combat, but learning how to work with an audience, learning how to do a little improv with the audience, to be able to change things, to be able to interact with the audience in some way.
Roll with the audience sometimes.
Roll with the audience sometimes. Stay within character. You know, that's the big thing. Stay in character.
Stay in character, Sam, and keep it PG, Sam. Don't leave Sam on the stage alone, Sam. Yeah.
Stay in period, Sam. I do not want to hear something about a microwave. They did not have them back in the 1430s. Yes, we have rules. One of the rules is never let Sam stay on stage by himself.
Well, I was good during the last show. I could have, but I didn't. But yeah, I'm one of those that was kind of new to acting. And then I guess you say caught the bug, but I grew up on Robin Williams and all those silly shows in the past, so that when I have a chance to goof off, I usually do. And I'll do that on stage sometimes, but I don't mean to crack up both the audience or the other actors sometimes when I goof off or when I mess up.
Oh, yeah, in the last show you threw a line in from Scrooge.
Yeah, I didn't mean to say that. It's so hard when you play a character so many times, and then you get a line that has something to do with spirits be gone and all that, and then it's haunt me no longer. And it's,
You got, I think, at least one actor on stage trying not to laugh when you did that. Well, and then, of course, there's dinner theater. Dinner theater in Stage and Steel is a little bit different, and it's a lot of fun. In Carnegie, in our first several years when we started dinner theater, we handed out 10 utensils. Your right thumb, your right index finger, your right middle finger, your right pinky finger, all the way down to the left hand, the left thumb. You had 10 utensils. And we always said, and if you only had 9 utensils, it's because you got caught on one of our shows bringing in one of those weird inventions called a fork. And the meal itself is, we start off as the doors open with soup and salad, and then the first act begins, and then we break for intermission, and then out comes the main entree, and then we break for intermission again, and out comes the dessert. So the meal, it's not just eat and then see the show. The meal is spaced out throughout the show, and it's served by the actors, and the actors have to stay in character. And that's where it's a lot of fun, and that's where they get a lot of experience, too, trying to stay in character and interacting with the audience.
Especially during murder mysteries.
Oh, murder mysteries are the worst, because the audience members will try to, like, ask them questions or try to incriminate them during those intermissions.
Oh, come on, you can tell me who did it. Come on. No one, just whisper it to me. I won't tell anyone. I want to... would you like any more lemonade, sire?
or if we have two characters that hate each other, the audience will actually like try to get them into an argument. It's a lot of fun to watch them do that.
Yeah, it was nice to be able to go back to the way we had, well, sort of the way we did dinner theater, because a lot of people had a lot of fun. Those were usually our biggest nights in the past. And then with COVID, we were really worried about how people would react. So the first two years, wasn't it? We were back. We didn't do dinner theater.
Right. We started dinner theater back up in 23.
We did a little pasta bar night so that the actor, no one was handling the food, but the audience, well, after we cooked it, the audience members would be able to make their bowls and stuff. But some people seemed to like that, but we had a few of our regulars come. And they missed what we used to do. And we were finally able to figure out a way to bring it back. Just that we haven't gone back to the
10 utensils. With the hands yet. Yeah, we haven't gone back to the eating with the hands yet.
We used to do the...
I'm not sure that we're quite there yet.
Well, we had the wassail that we followed on, where someone would say wassail, and then it was a toast that... Everyone else would say wassail, drink kale, while I'm holding my hand up. This is, you can't see it.
We you hold can't your see hand your up, hand, Sam.
and you make a circle around your head, an orbit of the drink, And
without spilling the drink.
Without spilling the drink. And for a few people that we knew, one of our actresses loved to kind of set them up where she'd fill the drink all the way up to the top of the glass and then do the wassail and watch them try to really gently hold the cup over their head as they roll it around without spilling it. But again, we've had to make changes and update to the way things are nowadays. So messes and people getting liquid on themselves from someone else and whatnot. Not to say that it was like an old Gallagher routine that we were throwing watermelons and smashing them in front and all that.
No food fights.
It never evolved into that. But there's always the fear. And then we want to make people feel comfortable. So that our shows are open to all. Like our festivals, we like to say, are from ages 8 to 80. We also like to have people with different needs to be comfortable and to be able to see our shows as well. So one of the things when we moved here to the Blue Wave was the ability to have access to an elevator so that wheelchairs or walkers will be able to access the theater easier. And that's always been a goal of ours, to make sure that we're totally accessible for all ages and all bearings of people from age 8 to 80.
Yeah, that was always, when we were in Carnegie, the hall that we were in was on the second floor and there was no access. And it was a heartbreak to us not being able to accommodate audience members.
The older audience, because when we were doing Sunday shows back then, we had a few that liked to come on the Sunday shows. And it was just a couple little flights of steps up into that older hall. But for a few of the actors that had some older family, it was a little rough to help get them up there. So having a way to get people in here, into our building, without the obstacles of life, it's very comforting for that.
In speaking, segueing into audience participation and how Stage and Steel is different, we expect our audience members to cheer and boo. Cheer the heroes and boo the villains. And we have different cheering sections. We assign different sections of the audience to cheer on different nights during stories with tournaments. Or we'll just, tell the audience members that they're expected to cheer the heroes and boo the villains. And that opens it up and allows them to make a little bit of noise and interact a little bit more. It allows families to bring younger children where they're worried about whether the children are going to be silent throughout the production.
Or noisy.
Noisy. And it actually has brought in other organizations. We had a group for many years that would come to our shows. It was an adult men's home. They would bring the people there. Because if they did make a little bit of noise, it didn't matter, that they could. They really enjoyed themselves, and they got to see a show. They got to be themselves. And they were the greatest. They would come up on stage after the show, and they'd want pictures with all the actors, and they'd want autographs of all the actors.
Oh, a couple of the guys, yeah, they made sure that they got to come on those nights.
Yeah.
They became regulars when they were able to come out here. And, yeah, they would remember the last show we did and ask for autographs on the programs and stuff.
They were just so much fun, and it was great because, if they made some noises, it didn't matter. But going back to our very first show, the villain, there was this little girl in the audience. I think she was like 7 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And the villain was, pretty villainous. And she got up out of her seat and walked up on the stage and started screaming at the villain, "You cheat, you cheat, you cheat."
Well, it's where we let the audience choose. Should he go to the stocks, or should he be put in the dungeon, or should he be executed?
And this little girl she stood up on her chair and started screaming, "Kill him! kill him and her parents. I mean, they've got their hands in their face. They're like trying to be as small as they can possibly be.
Yeah, I never saw someone try to like fold themselves up in their own folding chair before to hide as they're trying to talk the girl down. And she got into it.
Yeah. She's up on her chair, she's just screaming, "Kill him! Kill him! Kill him right now! He's a cheater!" Oh, it was hysterical, and we absolutely loved it. And we've joked about it ever since. It's like, I wonder if they ever took her to like some place like the Benjamin or Heinz Hall.
Well, they did come back for the second show we did of the vampire.
Yeah.
Oh, I love vampires, and yeah, she brought a few friends too. Yep. I remember. I'm turning my head. A few friends for that show.
But it's happened. Like, one of the most enduring moments. You've got the story of Scrooge, and it's Christmas morning, and he's trying to wake up from the terrible dream that he had, the terrible nightmare, and he's just turning and turning in his bed. And in our production, we had a huge set change going on. So we had told our Scrooge, turn a lot, because we've got to get this set change done. And there was this little girl in the audience, and she just suddenly set out. She sat up nice and straight, and she said, "Scrooge, wake up, Scrooge." And Scrooge just sat up in the bed automatically, looked at her in the audience, and said, "Oh, I am awake now. Thank you." And it was just such this enduring moment. I mean, you could hear the awe from the audience. You could feel it. I mean, everyone backstage just stopped what they were doing, and to feel the magic of that moment. There's been a lot of other great moments. Lots of stories that we hope to tell in the future. Stories of From Stage and Steel Productions.
Yeah, the stories from the stage. That's what I'm working on next.
Stories from the stage, yes. We've got a lot of really great ones, and that's one of the ones I always like to tell. 90% of our stories are good stories, and only 10 of them have ever been times where you're like, oh.
Well, it depends, but yeah. We don't need candy thrown at us, please.
Well, as a writer for stage, one of the things that I absolutely hate are small characters. I try to eliminate them as much as I possibly can. I really don't like, asking an actor to devote all this time for a role that just has a couple of lines in one scene. And I don't like having actors do multiple characters, because sometimes the audience is just really, really confused by, wait a minute, is that the same actor in a different, or the same character in a different costume, or is that two different characters with the same actor? I mean, they can get really confused with that, so I don't like that. So I generally try to not have, but occasionally you have to have that like the messenger of doom, that comes in with a scroll and reports something. Or an extra person because the characters are being chosen for something, and you want to make it so it's not like every single person who ever tried to do something successfully did it. So, you want that extra character that fails. So we often bring audience members up, and we have the audience members portray that character, which to a lot of audience members is incredibly scary. And the fun thing is it doesn't matter whether you are good or if you are terrible, because the audience loves you for trying, and we appreciate you too. And it's a great moment. If we have a kid that comes up, it becomes a great picture moment because they're up on stage with all the actors, and we always like introduce them to the audience, and I ask the audience for a round of applause, which just puts them at ease. But we found out the hard way. The first time we did this, remember the first time we did this? It was a vampire in King Arthur's court. And we had a character whisper into the audience member's
ear.
Yeah,
it was to tell the spell how to bring us back to normal time.
Right. It was the
modern time, sorry.
Incantation of a spell. And whispered it into the ear of the audience member. And the audience member looked at him and said, "Is that what you want me to say?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, that's what we want you to say." And then he said something that was not what was whispered into his ear.
No, it was, said, "Apart thy veil," it came out as "blow my veil." And it just didn't sound right.
It just did not sound right. And
Since then, I've been printing cards with the words that the audience members say with the cue from the actor that they're going with. So,
and we train the actors. Okay, this is, you know, you're going to help this audience member. You're going to point to them on the card exactly what they say and when they say it. You're going to help them with where they're going to stand. You know, so we really kind of make the audience member feel comfortable as they're doing this. But, I mean, there's been some really great stories about this that people don't really realize. Like, the day we chose a kid to come up on stage and had absolutely no clue that this kid was on the spectrum and couldn't read very well. And they actually read the card just fine. They portrayed the character just fine. They got all of that applause. And they felt accomplished. And it was, a turning point in their life. And that... that's just a feel-good.
We're hitting the 50-minute mark.
Oh, wow. Well, there'll be a lot of stuff edited out, too.
Yeah.
So, the history of Stage and Steel. There's a lot more that we want to talk about, especially the stories of the stage series.
Stories from the stage.
Stories from the stage series, where we want to talk about some of the really crazy things that have happened in our shows that a lot of times were just hysterical. We always say that the audience makes every performance different and unique. 15 years, 15 seasons of Stage and Steel Productions, and hopefully there'll be another 15. I guess we're signing off now on this particular podcast, signing off with Ruth
and Sam.